All right. Can everybody hear me way back there? All right, great. Thank you, Claire. That was very nice. I appreciate it. Please hang around. Don't leave. Don't get out in the hallway. It is a pleasure to be here. Working Solutions is the title of this. I want you to ask any questions you want to during this presentation. I am a lawyer. I will be. I promise to respond to every question. I may not answer every question, but I promise to respond to every question. If you get bored, you want a joke, raise your hand, let me know. This is going to be participatory, so I'm going to ask you questions. That means you're going to have to give me answers. If not, we may be here a long time. I'm going to try to make this not like the last class I taught. I had it's a four-hour class, okay? Four-hour class. I had about 30 slides to go through to talk about strategic HR. I made it through three slides in 4 hours. So I'll try not to do that. I think I've got about 23 slides or something here today. So we'll try to make it through in an hour or less. Okay. You know, when you're talking about, and how many of you, by the way, how many of you have an HR manager at your facility? Okay. And how many of you have an HR manager with a true HR background? Somebody that went to school for HR, somebody that came out of another HR. Okay. Not too many, just a few. Okay. When you talk about your employee relations, about being a best place to work, you really have to look at everything holistically. Okay. And that's where a lot of HR people and a lot of organizations break down. They function on, they think about one thing, they've got operational tasks to complete, we're all running lean, we don't have a lot of HR folks, and they lose, I guess, sight of where they want to do and what they want to do as far as taking the company to the place they'd like it to be. By the way, how many of you think you have a great place to work? Okay. All right, very good. Most of the people think you've got a great place to work. Of course, a lot of you own the companies or run the companies, but I understand everything looks great when you do that. We'll talk about some things that... Okay. So, let me ask you this. I did go, and I don't see... Is Matt... I don't see Matt. Is Matt... Yeah, there. Hi, Matt. It's good to see you. I went down to his facility. He's got a great facility. He was very kind. He talked to me. He took me through a tour. I do have background in manufacturing, actually. I worked my way... when I was in college, and right before I went to college, I worked at R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company. We got any smokers in here? Not too many. It's not a real popular thing anymore. I made Camel I didn't make them. They didn't trust me to make the actual cigarettes. But I was doing all the dirty and nasty jobs that nobody else would do. But we made Camel non-filter, something that the reason there's not too many Camel non-filter smokers around is because they're all dead. But that's what I was making back a long, long time ago. And then I've actually worked in tire factories when I was with Michelin, and I managed in a tire factory. So I came up, I'm kind of the second generation of college grad. My father was a college grad, but everybody before that was not. And I grew up on my great-grandfather's farm. So I know a little bit about work. We actually had a sawmill on that farm, but it wasn't anything like Matt's sawmill at all. It was just a Walton-type farm, okay? For anybody that remembers the Waltons, the TV show, okay? It's kind of like that. Okay, so what are the issues? First of all, it's not a real glamorous industry, you know? I mean, it probably is for you. I mean, you work in the industry, you think it's glamorous to be in the wood industry, but a lot of people wouldn't view the lumber manufacturing, processing as super glamorous. You know, they see things like BMWs driving up and down the road and all these other automotive things. And so they view that as kind of glamorous. Google and Amazon. But it's not glamorous. But you know what? About 99.9% of companies aren't glamorous. You know? I came out of two. I mean, Michelin's not that glamorous. R.J. Reynolds isn't that glamorous for sure. And Hubble is not that glamorous. It's just an industrial company that makes electrical products. So not too glamorous. But it doesn't mean you can't have a great place to work or that you don't have a great place to work. It's all about how you do it. In fact, when I came into Hubble, I had two offers at the same time. One was with Walmart to be the director of labor relations for 1.5 million employees. And the other one was Hubble. Well, I thought, well, I'll take Hubble. This is about the same pay, everything. Hubble was, I didn't have to move, relocate. I thought I'd take Hubble. I thought it was a 120-year-old company. Come in, I can make some changes. Not to be. It was absolutely the worst. I mean, I many, many times over my 13 years, I said, I wish I'd gone and taken the job at Walmart because I didn't know what I was getting into. It was like a 120-year-old startup company. They were an acquisition of 16 companies, all put together. Everything was different. Nothing was, they had five ERP systems. There were no policies and processes in place. I mean, there was no vacation given in many cases until you'd been there a year or two. So it was a very hard place to go because you didn't start at zero. You had to start, you had to go from a negative to a zero to a positive with that company. And in 4 years, we took it from what I would consider the worst place to work to the best place to work. And not by my standards, but by South Carolina standards, we won the best place to work. So it's not a glamorous industry. It's kind of hot and cold, okay? Inside, outdoors, can be dirty, can be dusty, can be dangerous, okay? Let's see. Not much of a career path, and lots of competition for employees. Okay. Excuse me. Okay. I'm not sure that this is where you're categorized. Are you categorized? Do you know if you're categorized as mining and logging operations for the Department of Labor? Does anybody know that? Okay. Is that a no or you don't know? I don't know. Okay. I think that's where you would be categorized. And what this tells me, and I'm not sure if this is right or not, but if you look at this, this would tell me that you are separating at about 56% in 2016 and you're hiring at about 42%. So that means you're either making your businesses very, very, very efficient and you're cutting out the number of employees needed, or you're really struggling to fill the positions that are turning over, and you're turning over at about a 56% rate as an overall industry. Now, I don't know. I know that that's not true for Matt's operation. I don't know. Is anybody at 50% turnover rate as your business? How about, let me ask you this. How many are you at? 10%? 20%? I'm not seeing any participation. 30%? Are you less than 10%? Okay, there I got some responses. Okay, no, we're not less than 10. We don't know really where we are? Is that what I'm sorry, that's a simple answer? Okay, that's a simple answer. We don't know where we are. Okay, so it's somewhere between 10 and probably 50%. That's not that great. Do you know what it cost you to have turnover like that? Does anybody know? Has anybody ever costed what it takes? And I'm one of these HR people. I was a finance economics double major in college, so I don't deal like a lot of frou-frou HR people. I don't tell you what the theories are and that it could be three times your salary based on this or that. No, I just look at what does it cost you to hire a person, What does it cost? Does anybody know what it costs to hire a person? It'll probably be different for every single one of your facilities. But, I did it when I was at Hubble, and it would range, depending on what you had going on, between about $8,500 and about $10,500 per person. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what it costs you, but, I mean, that's what it was costing us in real dollars. So if you can reduce it by 10%, and you have, I don't know, what's the average size of your facility? Maybe 100 people or something from, that's what I kind of gather, maybe 100 people or a little over 100 people. I mean, if you can cut that down 10, get it from 30% or 20% down to 10%, I mean, that's real dollars that you can put someplace else. Okay, so what should we do about this? And that's kind of what we're going to talk about in largest part today. And then after we get done, if you want to come and ask me some more questions, I'll do my best to respond to those too. Let's see, what should we do? Yeah, we may have technical, okay. Sell the business, that's an option. Just sell the business, just get out of it. It's too much trouble. Let's see, what else could we get here? Give up? I don't view this crowd as too willing to give up on things. What else we got here? These are all very viable options that some people choose. Keep doing what you're doing. And what's the definition of insanity? Keep doing what you're doing. And but some, Wait a minute. It's flipped up. Give up. Oh, hope and pray. Hope and prayer, that's always a good thing to do. But maybe you should do some other things. Okay. I heard at the table last night, I think a couple of the companies were talking about their websites and things like that. I haven't gone. I know there's about 100 members of this association. I'm not gone on and looked at the websites, but I'm telling you, a lot of it, when you're thinking holistically, a lot of it is about branding and the way you brand yourselves just to the public in general. Okay? I call this, it's funny. I work for Michelin for 16 years. And Michelin's an engineering company. They're a very critical company and very good company. In many respects, one of the best companies around. They had a healthcare plan. They would always survey their employees. And they surveyed those employees, and every time the survey came back, it said that the healthcare was not good. Just not good. At Hubble, I would survey employees. And it always came back, hey, your health care plan is better than average. Now, in actuality, Michelin's plan was much better than Hubble's plan. So why do you think that the people at Hubble thought their plan was good and the people at Michelin thought their plan was bad? There are no stupid answers. Well, there are, but I'm just kidding. What do you think? Why would you think that? I'm sorry? I heard somebody say something. I know this is a smart bunch of folks. You have your own businesses here. You do think quite a bit, I know. Yes, ma'am. How the plan was explained. You're pretty close. No. The reason is something that you may not ever really think of. It's because Michelin, being a critical type company, spent all their time explaining to people why something wasn't as good as it may have been last year, or why this isn't the same as somebody else's. Whereas at Hubble, I made it a point, I called it positive PR for ER. I only talked about how good everything was. And I explained it in terms of everything's good. This is better than this. And it's all about, if I perceive something as being bad, it's bad. That is the reality. As opposed to perceiving something as being good. So it's all about the way you brand, the way you sell, the way you market your company. I mean, at least to a large degree. It's not always the case, but to a large degree. So what is your brand? And it's all about really capturing the authenticity of the company culture. Do you know what your company culture is? Have you ever really thought, what's your company culture? Okay, quality people providing quality service. Okay, that's and products. Okay, all right, good. What kind of culture do you have? I can throw out one, I guarantee you. How many of you work for a family-owned business? Okay. So would you say that maybe it's like a family here? Now, yeah, obviously it's going to be like a family for the family members. Is it a family for the rest of the people? By the way, you know, working for your family might be a pretty tough thing to do. I watch all these TV shows, you know, like American Chopper and all these other things, And the family businesses are a mess, but I've actually seen some very good businesses. And I know, how many of you are like, I'm fascinated by something. I was talking about it at the table last night. I actually looked up the answer because I couldn't remember it. But I remember when I worked for Michelin, Michelin was a family-owned business. Believe it or not, a huge company. I mean, it was, I think when I left it, it was about $16 billion business. And it was still a family-owned business and a family-run business. How many of you are in the second generation of your family business? Third? Fourth? Do you know what the probability of surviving into the fourth generation? Fifth?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This is fascinating to me because What do you think the survival rate into just the fourth generation of a family-run business is? How much? Less than 1%? Less than 5%? What would you say, sir? You're in fifth generation.
Less than 1.
I don't know what it is in the fifth generation. It didn't go that far, but if you get past the first generation, just first generation, 30% survival rate. If you get to the fourth generation, you're at a 3% rate of survival. And it's fascinating to me. And it really speaks well for this industry, I think, that you have survived and thrived for multiple generations. And we may talk a little bit more about that, too, in a second if we have time. Okay, I just threw these kinds of things together because when I'm thinking about, after visiting Matt's plant, how would I start thinking about, branding, okay, and coming up and, when I'm selling this to potential employees, and what do I want to instill in employees? So, and I put fun, it's going to be fun to work there. Friendly. How many of you think you got a friendly workplace? All right. Good. Friendly. Family. I know we got that. I just asked that question. It's physical. Now, when I was younger, I would have really been, I was all about manhood and doing, I was an athlete and all that sort of thing. I would have eaten this up because this is man, you got to be a man to do out here and do this kind of work. This is man work. So I would like that. Advancement. How many of you have advancement opportunities within your company? I mean, you think about. Okay. Some. Outdoors. There's definitely some outdoors involved. Good benefits. How many of you think you've got good benefits? Okay. See, a lot of it. And a lot of you do. I mean, I've talked to some of you, and the benefits are not bad. They're very competitive, even with larger companies. Secure. This is probably a fairly secure industry, isn't it? I mean, I don't know that for a fact, but how many of you have layoffs last year? Nobody is raising their hand. How about the year before that? How many of you haven't had a layoff in at least 5 years? Okay, so a lot of you haven't. So it's a very secure place to work. Teams. How many of you would view your brand and what you did as a team environment? Okay, team environment. Good. These are all things that you can start formulating and actually actively, not just by accident, but actually trying to instill in the culture of the business to help attract and retain employees. Safety. I mean, I know everybody's here about safety because this is a fairly dangerous operation. Strong. You got to be kind of strong, to work there. And in a sense, it's a strong company. It's a strong family. I mean, all these things. How many of you think you have a respect? And this is a key word that I'm going to talk about later. Respectful workplace. How many of you think you have a respectful workplace? If I went and asked your employees, the people that run this business, the people that supervise you every day, respect you? How many of them are going to raise their hands? Or how many of you would say they would raise their hands? They would say that. Really? Okay. All right. A few. Some. All right. Good. That's very important. My actual expertise from my career, I started working, believe it or not, don't shoot me. I came out of college, started at 20 years old. I worked for the National Labor Relations Board. Does anybody know what they do? Anybody unionized here? Do we have any unionized operations? No? Okay. Anyway, I worked for the National Labor Relations Board. And, that is something, I always told people, the managers, the people that employees interact with, you are the company to those people. It's not whatever names on the facility. You are. So if they view you as being fair, accurate, consistent, equitable with them, that's the way they're going to view the company. And if they view you as otherwise, that's how they're going to view the company. Let's see. Fresh air. Yeah, we got fresh air. Opportunities. And then rewarding. How many of you think your business is rewarding? How many of you say it's rewarding in other ways other than pay and benefits? Okay, good, okay. All right, I don't know why that jumped up like that, but that's fine. How to do it? Well, easy thing. You know, in college life, they would call that plagiarism, you know, and copying, and they'd fail you. But in business, you copy other ideas. That's a smart thing to do. So if you see something out there you like or that's working for somebody else, you copy those ideas. Videos on the website. I don't know how many of you have videos on the website that help brand and sell your place of employment, but that's, it's always a good idea, particularly with the millennials. And I know we've got millennials that work for you, that are part of the family and going to be running the business someday, perhaps. Billboards, another way to do it. Here's old Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A's got great branding, by the way, great company, great values. I even instilled their serve model of leadership into a secular company, and it worked very, very well. We'd give awards every quarter to managers for them having a matching. I'd have them submit applications to people they were wanting to nominate, managers that exemplified the serve model, and I rejected about 98% of them because they weren't really related to the serve. They would, you know, he's doing a great job or she's doing a great job, and exceeded my expectations. That's not what the serve model's about. And we gave little awards without their name on it. So if they saw other managers that worked for them that were exhibiting the serve model of leadership, they could give it to them. Because it's not about so much recognition when you're a servant leader. Okay, what else we got here? A lot of these things. They're the best place to work. Most states have this. And brochures for, you know, the whole reason behind the best place to work, I was obsessed with the best place to work. In fact, I used to follow, do anybody follow the Forbes Fortune 500 or the Forbes 100 best places to work? You know, I was amazed. One year, about 15 years ago, and I used to look at this every year, and I would read it intently to find out what is making these companies, how do they get on this list, what are they doing, what are they not doing. R.J. Reynolds was actually a best place to work about 15 years ago. Now, who would have thunk it? A manufacturing company. Most of the companies that make it are not manufacturing. And a cigarette company on top of that. Why do you think they made it? And a lot of it, 75% of making one of these awards is survey sent to your employees. So it's survey response. The other 25% is your benefits and all the things that you may do for employees that are progressive kinds of employment things. Why do you think they would make it? Any ideas? This is kind of a hard question because I wouldn't have known had I not read it. I wouldn't have been able to guess this. I'm not that smart. They said that it was like a bunker mentality in everybody because they were under attack by everybody. Everybody was after the cigarette industry, everybody just came together and worked as a team. So it's not like they're fighting each other and that there's issues internally. They're trying to fight outside sources, so that brought everybody together in a team. And so when they filled out the surveys, I mean, they were all positive about their place of employment because they were all working as a team, doing what needed to be done to try to survive. And that's why they made that list, which is an interesting kind of a thing I would have never guessed before. And then brochures for recruiting fairs and things like that are always good. So any kind of marketing materials you have. So how does your organization reach potential? I know most of you probably have employee referral, some sort of employee referral process, program. You may even pay people if they stay on the job and that sort of thing. But other employees is a great way to get new employees. You know, and your employees can be the best advertisement you have, all right? Oops, something happened. Oh, there he is. Relationship with high school, technical colleges, and universities. Now, I'm going to say, Matt, you're a big guy. I don't want you to get mad at me. But when I went down to see Matt, I passed by a high school. How far is that high school from you, Matt? A mile or so? A couple of miles. And one of the questions I asked Matt, I said, hey, Matt, how many, you know, do you recruit from this high school up the road? I mean, it's literally 2 miles away. And he said, at that point, he said no, right? He said no. Hadn't been to the high school. Well, I mean, you're missing opportunities. If you've got high schools or technical colleges, and probably most of you are using technical colleges because you've got these electromac type folks you need to get and more skilled labor, but high schools, and the key about any high school or university or anything like that is to establish a relationship with them. It doesn't mean that you'll get a ton of people initially, but you've got to have an ongoing relationship with them. Get to know their guidance counselors, get to know their teachers, get to know their football coaches or their basketball coaches and people like that. And that way, they'll be thinking of you and they'll kind of know what you're looking for and what kind of person would work best with your place of employment, and they'll start referring people to you. And that would be a great place, I think, to find employees for the more entry-level positions, and then they can work themselves up. Social media, it doesn't matter whether you're working as a person in a lumber mill or a factory or anything, any kind of a media. I mean, everybody's connected today. Everybody has cell phones. Everybody knows how to use social media. Or if they're younger, they know how to use social media. And so social media is a great place and it's starting to become one of the more prominent places for young people to look for jobs is on social media. Okay. Do you know what the profile of a successful employee is at your business? How many of you think you know what a successful profile is? Now, upright and breathing does not count. And then sometimes you kind of feel like that's what it is because everybody's struggling. And by the way, you're not alone. Every single, I am very involved in both national, local, and state HR activities. And I meet with a lot of HR people. Every single HR person is saying the very same thing. It doesn't matter if they're with Boeing or with BMW or McDonald's. They can't find people. They can't find them. We've got a real employment problem like we haven't had in years, and it's going to cause all sorts of things to happen. You're going to drive wages up. You're going to have more rapid turnover potentially and things like that. So anyway, do you know what makes a successful employee? How many of you test potential employees? Besides, no, I'm not going to drug test. But how many of you actually have any kind of a testing methodology that's used for employees? Anybody? Okay. Does it work? Okay. It should. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. And even when I was a lawyer back at Michelin, and even in my late 20s, I got this idea that, look, I think we could actually test people. And I had different angles on it. I wanted people that were going to be what I would call good corporate citizens. You know, we wanted to keep unions out of Michelin at that point, and I wanted people that wouldn't file workers' comp claims, wouldn't be litigious, all that sort of thing. So I went to the University of North Carolina, and I had an industrial psychologist, PhD, come in and formulate testing processes, and there are lots of simpler ways to do this, believe me, that would tell me with some predictive, certainty that people weren't going to be litigious, so they weren't going to sue me, they were going to be good team players, and they weren't going to be prone to filing workers' comp claims and things like that. And it does actually work, and there's lots of standardized testing things that you can use, so it's something to think about to help you get off on the right foot. There's also other companies now that are really into psychological testing. I've got a company that I work with, and there's several out there that the company I work with actually goes to they're working with the NFL, and they actually psychologically test people, all the top draft picks, to predict how successful. They're not talking about physical anything, no physical attributes. It's all in the head. I mean, how many quarterbacks, for those of you that follow sports, how many quarterbacks that you think are going to be super, and then they just can't handle it? You got a question? They do psychological testing. I know I've worked with a company that actually does the psychological testing on it to predict how well a potential NFL draftee, a college, like you take Deshaun Watson, he was tested as part of this from this company, as were all these other major NFL potential quarterbacks, to see how well they, how they matched up to people like Brett Favre, or how they matched up with people Manning, some of the better quarterbacks. I'm sorry? No, they can't. If they ask them about criminal record, they would exclude most of them. But yeah, that's I don't know, maybe that's a plus. Anyway, but I'll tell you, You may disagree with this, and you see what I've got put up here about disabled. How many of you have disabled employees in your workforce? That's what I thought. How many of you think a disabled employee could not function in my workplace? And I'm sure there's a lot of that. I would have probably said that several years ago. The university I'm with has led kind of a lot of research on this, done some papers. It's getting kind of nationally known. They've worked with a company called Walmart in their distribution centers, and now this is being followed by many, many companies that are starting to implement this, because they found, by putting in people with all sorts of disabilities, mental disabilities, physical disabilities, all kinds of disabilities. And the thing that's fascinating about me, and there are some things I would predict. I would predict that you would have a safer workplace if you had a disabled employee. That's true. I would predict that the turnover rate for disabled employees would be less. That is true. What else? I would predict that they would be on time and enjoy their job. That's true. Guess what I wouldn't predict that's true? What's really important about employment at your plants, sir? Productivity. This is what's fascinating to me. When compared to the non-disabled employee, whose productivity do you think was better than the non-disabled employee? You can't miss that question. It's the disabled. It was the disabled people, which I was shocked at. I was absolutely shocked that their productivity was higher than a non-disabled. Because I would view them, okay, this person got Down syndrome. I mean, they can't move that. They're not going to move. They're not going to do it this fast. No, but they're working in a distribution center, and their productivity is higher than the non-disabled employee. So it's something to think about. There's lots of research. It's an area that at least you should consider in some positions. I don't say all of them, but some. The other area that you're going to think about, can you back that one up? Let's go back. Ex-offenders. I don't know why it skipped ahead. Ex-offenders. How many of you employ ex-offenders in your workplace? Yeah, I've been doing this kind of thing for over 15 years. One, because I'm cheap, and two, because I wanted people to come into the workforce, and I wanted to make sure they were there on time and that they, you know, didn't get picked up. I was actually using people from the prison release program and pulling them into my plant. Had one plant in Florida that was not 100%, but you had a number of ex-offenders. Most of them are drug, you know, petty kinds of crimes. You pull them into the workforce. Hey, they got dropped off on time. They got picked up on time. If they screwed up, they were out of there and they knew it. I had no problems. And when they came out, if they had done a good job and we had a position, we would hire them. You know, and we're doing a public service. We're helping our company. Again, the turnover rates are lower. The work productivity was fine, and we didn't have any problems with theft or anything else that was out of the ordinary. And then, of course, people like me, the older employee, please don't forget us. I mean, they're still able to do things in the workplace. I don't know how many, what are your average age, by the way? I don't know what the average age. I know when I was down there, that would say that it was probably in their 40s down, maybe mid-40s even. So took them about mid-40s, okay? All right. How am I doing on time, Amanda? Am I okay? Okay. Key ingredient in having a great place to work. All right. I've already touched on this a little bit. You are the key to having a great place to work. It's all about you. Okay? This is a very true statement. It's an old, you know, there's lots of old HR, you know, sayings, but people leave managers, not companies. Okay? And for the largest part, I mean, even now, if you read surveys that are very current, they'll tell you that people leave managers, not companies. We're not going to, this is going to be available to you if you want to watch it. The reason I put this video in, I'm not going to play it today, but it's you know, a lot of people like Simon Sinek. He's, you know, does a lot of these TED Talks and things. But this talks, he talks from a military perspective about what people want. He uses military examples, and he talks about the fact that employees want to feel safe. And that's kind of interesting that it's coming from a military perspective. He's not really necessarily talking about safe from, you know, getting killed in battle or anything. He's talking about the way managers make people feel. Okay, do employees trust you? Do they believe you? Do they believe you've got their back? Do they believe that you support them? I mean, these are all key things to make people feel safe and to have a great place to work. And again, it goes back. They're going to view the company the way they view you. That's Simon there. What does good leadership look like? I just threw this in because I like leadership issues, and I've talked, I've studied leadership for a number of years, and I used to save every article on leadership. And so when I got to the university and somebody asked me to speak on leadership one time, I said, well, heck, I went back and I looked at every single article on leadership I had, and there were a lot of them, and then I just took the most common traits of leadership and put them into a few points that I could actually do a presentation. So instead of doing an hour presentation or so on leadership, I'll just tell you what those are. Communicate. You know, communication is really important for leaders. And it's not complex communications, it's simple communication. If you think about the best communicators, I mean, I don't know, you may or may not like Donald Trump, okay? But you know, his communication is pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Everybody knows what he's saying, when he says it, how he says it. Ronald Reagan was another one. I mean, these are politicians, but and Billy Graham, okay, take it on. I mean, pretty simple, okay? Repeats the message, simple message, concise, you know, but simple. And that's the number one thing people want is communicate simply, clearly, and often. Let's see what else we got here. I don't know why it's not, there it is. Integrity. You know, I cannot stress to you enough. And I think probably, I mean, I get the sense from this crowd that you would do this, but you probably, I mean, you tell people what, not necessarily what they want to hear, but the truth. And I've always found that if you tell people what, you know, the truth, they appreciate it. They may not like what you're telling them, but at least they respect you and they know that you're giving them, you're shooting straight with them. So integrity is important. Insight, you know, you need insight into the business, insight to what's going on. Influence, you need to be an influencer. The things you say, if you can't influence people by what you say, you're not an effective leader. Impact, if what you say and your leadership doesn't impact others, hopefully in a positive way, but impact others, you're not very effective as a leader. This is really important, and it kind of goes back to the whole safety thing that this Simon Sinek is talking about in his video, is you've got to encourage and care for people. That's very important. You know, encourage, and I'm not talking about, you know, telling people, just making them feel good and talking to them all the time and that sort of thing, and just telling them things that, you know, just to be saying it, because that'll be, people will figure out what that is. But if you got to really encourage, care for them, and care about their families. And then developing the other leaders is important. And let's see if there's anything else. I think there's one more. Yep, confidence and resiliency. You know, you've got to be, and I'm sure in this business and most businesses, if you're hitting a business, you've got to be pretty confident and you need to be resilient because there's going to be ups and downs of the business, hard times, good times, and that sort of thing. Okay. What your employees want? Respect and value. I mean, you've got to respect and value people. You've got to listen to employees. Employees are not all the same. And I know that some of you use, because I think Bailey uses the DISC assessments. And I don't know if you're familiar with the DISC assessments. It's like a personality test. There's lots of them out there. But it shows you that different people respond in different ways. Okay, so you need to communicate with people differently. They're not all the same. So you need to be sensitive to kind of what type they are. What you need to be short and concise, to the point, get it done, or do you need to be more, a little bit more soft and gentle when you respond to people? The other thing is people may not want to be managers, and a lot of people don't, but they want to be considered as valued, skilled employees. So anything you can do to have, you know, I know before the talks this afternoon started, we're talking about the program where you kind of get certified in the wood certification or something. Anything you can do to show people you care through their development is really important. So that could be cross-training. And that's a way to retain people because, and I'll tell you, you know, a lot of people, and I even last night at my dinner table, there was a little bit of millennial bashing going on. You know, we're talking about millennials and people are talking about, you know, they just can't understand millennials, can't get along, you know, don't understand them, they don't want to have the same work ethic. I don't necessarily think that's true. And whenever I give a talk on it, and there's lots of people that talk about the differences in the generations, you know, five generations, I think a sixth one now called the Z generation. It's more like me, the boomers. But I never talk about the differences. I always talk about the similarities. Now we've got, I know there's a couple of boomers over here. There's got to be a boomer here. How many boomers do we, or not boomers, millennials do we have in here? We've got lots of boomers too. Okay, we got some. Okay, how many of you do not wish to be respected in your job you do? Gosh, nobody raises their hand. How many of you, don't want to be taken seriously? How many of you don't want to be developed? How many of you don't want to be promoted and rise through the ranks? See, that's the same thing that boomers want. Boomers want to be respected. They want to feel valued. They want to feel like what they do is important. Any of you feel like you don't want what you do to feel be deemed important? All right? Those are all the same kind of traits that everybody wants. And that's what you should emphasize, not the differences, the similarities, and play on the similarities. Transparency and communication, we talked about that. And continuous improvement is an important way. Okay. All right. Four types of recognition. Cultural. Saying thank you in public is important to people, okay? Private's good too, but I think public acknowledgement of job well done is important. Exceptional performance, if somebody performs exceptionally, doesn't mean you have to necessarily give them anything, you can, but I mean, people need to know that you recognize exceptional performance because far too often, and I'll guarantee you that there's plenty of people in this room that say, you know, I'm never recognized for all my exceptional performance. I mean, sometimes what somebody might think is exceptional, I might not think that all that exceptional. I may think that's normal, but that's just a, you know, but if they do have success, exceptional performance, they need to do it. Career milestones, and that's simple. Does everybody do something for service awards at your facilities? Right? Okay. Most everybody is. Something like that's a career milestone. And then the fourth one is team and company. So anytime that you can reward team efforts is good. Okay, let's see here. Trying to get the next one up. All right. You know, if Matt has people that are average age of 45 or something, and I bet you, how many of you experience, I know the answer to this question before I ask it, but that's why I'm asking it. Lawyers only ask questions they know the answers to. That's the rule. That's what we learn in law school. Let me ask you this. How many of you would say that most of your turnover occurs within the first 6 months to a year? And anybody that would say that's okay, it's got to be everybody. That's most. So what does that mean about that period of time? Well, it's what I would call critical time, right? Kind of critical. That makes the onboarding, this is an area that most companies fail on. Now, how many of you, let me ask you this question. How many of you think millennials, this new generation, turns over faster than the rest of us old people? A millennial would raise her hand, yes. Anybody else? Generally speaking, yes. When I was at Hubble for 10 years, guess what my millennial turnover rate was? Guess what my overall employee turnover rate was first? What do you think that was? And it's the best place to work, so it's, what do you think? How much? 10? It was about average probably 7.5%. What do you think those crazy millennials are doing? Millennials, what do you think?
I was going to say it's less than that.
You would say it's less. Well, you're one of those crazy millennials, aren't you? How much?
4%
4%.
Yeah.
You are absolutely wrong.
What?
You are absolutely wrong, millennial. Anybody else going to guess? It was actually less than 2%. 2% for 10 years. Now, why would that be? I actually stumbled upon this. I wanted to say it's because I'm brilliant. That's what I would like to say, but in all honesty, it just kind of happened for a number of reasons. But we were doing the right things with millennials, and that's why the turnover rate was so. But I just knew kind of instinctively that I should maybe be doing this and that. But what we had is, I want to make sure I don't go over time. What we had is we brought them all in through an intern process. We interviewed them as if they were going to be full-time employees. We gave them really responsible, real jobs to do. We made them present to the executive team of the company, at the end of their period, with a PowerPoint and talking and answering questions that we would ask. If they did a good job, we would invite them back. We tried to move them into various areas. When they got out, we made it an active. We knew that they wanted recognition, praise, advancement. So we tried to make sure if they deserved it, we'd move them through faster. We paid really attention to the pay that they would receive. And then I would have lunch with them, as I did when they were interns. I would take the whole group to lunch once a year. But the reason I was taking them to lunch is because I really wanted to figure out, okay, how can we make the program for the internship better, and what would you like to do? And they said, well, we want to, what can we do for you now? And they would give me all these suggestions. And one of them was an affinity group. And I noticed that you kind of have what I would call an affinity group with millennials now. I don't know what it's called. The millennial, what's it called? Next Gen Council. We called ours HYPE, but it was the same sort of thing where they got to come together. They could formulate relationships, do things, things that they wanted to do that was important to them. And it worked out it was wonderful. I mean, but for 10 years, less than 2% turnover rate because of that. And by the way, for that, I think it's great that you have that Next Gen Council. I think that's a wonderful thing for all those reasons. And for the younger people that are going to come into the business, I think you're really blessed to do that, and I hope you do it well, because it's really nice to have that opportunity to do it, and I hope you take it seriously. And I know that a lot of folks maybe don't want to stay in the family business. I've seen that too, but I think it's great that you've got that going. It's a wonderful thing. Okay, make it simple. We talked about that. Make ongoing the first year. Touch points throughout the first year is important, so you've got to touch the new people a lot of times. And this one, assigning a buddy, a coach. I mean, does anybody do that, by the way? Okay, does it work well for you? What's your turnover? Do you see the turnover rate going down or up after it? Or okay. Yeah, that's a great thing to do. I would just assign somebody that's there, kind of watching over them for the first year, and you could even that can almost be a reward for really good employees, people that exhibit good team. So that's good for them too, because every mentoring program I've ever done, the mentors usually get as much out of it as the mentees, and they really like it, and it helps everybody, it helps the whole morale, engagement, everything else of the organization. Consider a 30, 60, or 90-day interview. Does anybody do that? I actually gave a Disrupt HR talk on that. It's online if you looked up HR, on something called stay interviews, which I'll talk about in a second. But that was fascinating to me the first time I did it. I did it, and I would have said, you know something, Steve, you have done the best job in communicating. The company's done the best job in communicating. You were doing the best job and all. And what came out of that stay interview completely shocked me. I found out that from the first level down, from the executive level, people didn't understand why we were doing all these changes and everything. I mean, exactly the opposite of what I wanted and what I thought. So sometimes and then stay interviews with your best employees, periodic employee surveys. Anybody use employee surveys? Okay, what's the most important thing about an employee survey? Okay, participation, engagement. Okay, but what is the most important thing about it? And this is something a lot of companies miss. Ma'am?
They want to be heard.
They want to be heard, but what's the most important thing? No, not doing what they say necessarily. It's getting back to them and following up and communicating what the results are, maybe formulating teams to work on some things that you want to work on, telling them what you're going to work on doing and why, and what you're not going to work on and why, because you can't do it. I mean, it's all about community, but you got to follow up. Otherwise, people will not trust the process, want to participate, take it seriously. They just won't care, and they won't think you really care. Plus, you wasted your money if you don't do that, really. Okay, here's an example. And this is going to be, again, if you're interested in anything like this, these you can use at any period, 30, 60, 90, 180, whenever you want to do them. But these are just questions that you can ask, you know, to employees. And the reason you're asking is you're learning, you're getting feedback, and you're showing that you care, that you want to hear them, you're engaging them. These are very effective tools. So you can see all the questions. If you were trying to create, okay, all these are really nice questions. I won't go over them because we are about out of time. All right, so that's your 30, 60, 90 day interview, okay? For your next, it's the annual stay interview. Now listen, when I did stay interviews, I had a lot of employees. I didn't go interview all the employees. What people would you want to give a stay interview to? Again, this is a smart group. What would you want to do? A lot of you don't even have full-time HR people, and you may have one. Of course, you're going to get 100 and some people. But how many people? Who would you interview? I'm sorry? Yeah, both of these are right answers. One of them is the people you want to stay and the best employees you have. I chose, when I did them, I took a cross-section of every level of employee, the ones I would least want to lose. Those are the ones I would interview. That way you optimize your time, you get the feedback, you're engaging them. You know what I also found about the stay interviews that was important? And this was part of the millennial thing, too, that I forgot to mention. Almost every millennial that I talked to on their stay interview, and when I asked them, what keeps you at this company, said the mentoring program. The fact that you assigned me a mentor and that person cares enough about me and you care enough about me to give me a mentor keeps me at this company. Again, purely by accident, I just thought a mentoring program was a good idea and I thought it would help keep them engaged, but I really didn't know it had that big effect. But it came back on those surveys, and we actually would interview them. We did it online, which don't know if that worked for you. And then we sat down in person and went back over the interview to get any details. I'll run through these questions really quickly because we're about out of time, I think, if I can get it to pull up. Again, these are somewhat different questions, somewhat the same. It's going to be online if you're interested. And you don't have to use these. These are just examples. That's your basic stay interview. Simple. Easy. You can have more questions, less questions. I wouldn't recommend a whole lot more. You want to keep it pretty simple, something that's easy to do and easy to look at. Okay. Now, how many of you send birthday cards to your employees? Do you send it to their home? Why? You don't know you're doing something good, do you? Why not just hand it to them at work? That would just be so less special. Why would I? Let me tell you what I did. I got this idea. I said, we got a lot of people in the business. They got a lot of kids. They got grandkids. Let's have them design a birthday card. Now, my company actually had a print shop that we used, but I said, have them design a birthday card, and then we'll choose two or three birthday cards, maybe mix and match the saying or the whatever the happy birthday wish is with the picture, and then we'll put the name of the child on the back and the age and the name of the employee and where they, what they do. And then I'm going to personally sign it and put a note on every single card. That's a lot of work. I spent a lot of hours on my weekends signing birthday cards, and the staff hated it. I mean, my staff hated it because they had to then go mail it to the, and they want to know, why do we have to do that? Why can't you just stamp your name in there or something? And why can't we just mail it to them internal mail? Why? would I not want to put it an internal mail or give it to them on the work site? Why? Exactly. I want the spouse and the family to see it. Why do I want the spouse and the family to see it? And then, you know, we're hitting on a key point for anything that's employee related. You want to engage the family as much as you can in everything that you do. Why? Why? This is key. All right, we've almost got an answer up here. You know, all right, smart people sit in the front. That's what they told me in class when I was going to school. All right, but okay. All right, because it makes happy employees? Not quite. It may, but what? When my employee goes home to their spouse after a hard day of work at the meal and starts complaining about the work, about the place, about the supervisor, what do I want the family members to say to me, the employee? Or what do I, the employee that's there at home, what do I want them to say? Oh no, you work for a good place. You work for a good place. They do X, they do Y, they do Z. We like what you do, so quit complaining. I mean, that's what you want. That's why you do it. All right, free food's always good. I'm sure most people get free food, but try to link it to something that's, you know, important. Production milestone, safety milestone, something. Gift cards, always nice as a way to reward people for special things that they do or out of the ordinary. You know, they've done something that they necessarily didn't have to do. Safety awards are always good, and probably most people do safety awards, but they're always nice. Family events are great. They're great. You know, I left Michelin, and for 3 years after I left Michelin, every Easter, it broke my heart, every Easter, my daughter asked me if she could go to the Easter egg hunt at Michelin. Stupid Easter egg hunt. It was pretty simple. Put a bunch of eggs out all over the place. You divided the kids up by ages. Okay, the 1 through 5s go over there. And that side of the grass, 5 to 10s go over here, and the big kids go over there, and you go run around and get eggs, and you go have little fun activities and bouncy things and all this stuff. 3 years she asked me about that. Okay. Let's see if I got anything else. Monitors in the break room. Any way you can communicate. If you've got monitors in the break rooms, things like that, it's a good communication tool. Let's see. Engagement tools. Focus groups. I always like focus groups because why? It engages the employees. It gets them involved. You're listening to them. You're doing kind of what they say. You've got to make sure you set the parameters on the focus groups. But you need, you know, those work well. Employee surveys. Again, you do them. Just make sure you get back and communicate properly. Training opportunities. Again, big, big thing. People want to be developed and trained even if they are not they don't want to be a boss or a manager or something. They just are a supervisor. They want training opportunities. Try to develop them. You know, when I was at Michelin, we put together something called a Michelin Manufacturing Professional. Okay, now what did that mean? It meant if you went through all this training and you got certified on all these other jobs and you were qualified so we could move you around if we had absenteeism or thing like that, then we would pay you more per hour, a little bit more per hour to be that, and you'd be certified. And it gave them a certification, internal certification, that they could use. Very good thing. Leading teams or projects, if you've ever got an opportunity to put people that aren't in leadership roles, you may want to test. That's a good thing to do. Seeking feedback and input's always good. Recognizing positive contributions, always a plus. Okay, let's see where I am. Wrap up, okay. Challenging times, branding's important. These are all things we talked about. Good leadership's key. Must be recognized more systematically. Onboarding is key to retention for the first year. And utilize effective and creative employee relations tools and engage an employee at every opportunity. All right, what did I not mention today? Ma'am? A sir?
Money, ma'am.
That's right. Yeah. Nice. And today, in today's world, a ma'am could have a beard. I don't know. But yes.
Yeah.
I do. What?
Money.
Money! Got the first one. I did not mention money. Why did I not mention money? I mean, everybody likes money, right? But I like money. Pay your money, that's exactly right. I've been following this survey for 50 years. 50 years. Not personally. I mean, I went back and looked. I've only been following it for about 37 years. But I always find this fascinating. Because every time the survey comes out, if you ask people, if I ask this room before what's important to people, somebody's going to say money. Most important thing, maybe many of you would say money. I don't know. That's what almost every time if you give it to managers, supervisors, people like that, they're going to say money is really important. But every time for the last 50 years that you've or more that you've surveyed employees, and this was 200,000 employees in a Forbes, Forbes published it. It wasn't a Forbes survey. Guess what comes up on the list? Appreciation for your work. Again, common across every generation. Good relationships with colleagues. Okay, so you want to like the people you work with. You want to get along with people. Good work-life balance. That's important to people today, and it's always been. Good relationships with superiors. Extremely important. Company financial stability. Now look, we're already down to 5, and we haven't hit benefits yet, right? Or wages. What's 6? Learning and career development. Okay? Job security. We're at 7. How many of you think pay is the next one? All right. You're wrong. Attractive fixed salary. That's the next one. So that makes it 8th on the list. Interesting job content. It's amazing to me that that wasn't higher. But all these other things are more important. Company values. And I think that's the list. And with that, I want to say thank you very much for the time that you've allowed me to present to you today. And thank you to Linda, to Amanda. You guys do a great job putting on a great conference. And if you have any questions, do I have any time to answer questions or no? Not really. If you want me to answer questions, there's going to be a session after this. You can come ask me anything you want to ask me about, and I'll give you a response. So thank you very much.